Three transports bearing New Republic strike teams landed on the Maw installation's central asteroid, blasting through the closed bay doors with their forward laser cannons. As the transports opened egress doors like mechanical wings, the teams flooded out of the passenger compartments and fanned into defensive phalanxes, holding high-energy rifles in front of them. Chewbacca thumped down the ramp, holding his bowcaster in front of him. He gestured with his hairy paw for his elite team of commandos to follow. They approached a vast, rock-walled workroom where Chewbacca remembered performing endless hours of heavy labor. The doors stood sealed by heavy blast shields. Two members of the assault team rushed forward with thermal detonators in each hand.
"Move out,"
the strike team leader said. Chewbacca charged over the fallen door and threw the smoke into the sealed bay. The captive Wookiees were already wreaking frenzied and bloody revenge upon their captors. As the smoke cleared, Chewbacca was disappointed to find the battle already over. But he was elated that the Wookiees had taken a stand upon sensing that their misery had finally turned. When the fighting began to die down, Kwee Zooks shuttled down to the installation with Wedge Antilles. Kwee saw the planetoids growing larger as they approached. She had spent most of her life down there, but she remembered little of it. Other than the destruction of the first corvette, the New Republic fleet had suffered minimal losses. The Maw scientists had put up even less resistance than Wedge had feared. Kwee looked forward now to going through her old labs, eager to find her own files in hopes of answering some of her questions, but afraid to learn the answers. Wedge reached over to hold her hand. "It'll be fine. You'll be a great help. Wait and see." She looked longingly at him with her large eyes.
"I'll do my best."
But something caught her attention and she pointed quickly.
"Look, Wedge. We've got to stop it."
Suddenly, the Death Star prototype rose away from Maw installation, glistening in the reflected light of the gas cloud.
"According to my own records, Maw installation had a fully functional prototype. If they take that Death Star into New Republic space..."
Before she could complete her sentence, the gigantic sphere of the Death Star shot away toward the edge of the black hole cluster and vanished into the masking clouds of super-hot gas. As the sun rose on Yavin, warming the jungles until mists rose in the air, the Calamarian Terpfin stood in the shadow of the great temple, having just disembarked from a stolen New Republic B-wing. Terpfin's mind was whirling. Many years ago, the Imperials had surgically removed parts of his brain and replaced them with vat-grown organic circuits that allowed Ambassador Fergan to use Terpfin as a perfectly disguised puppet. For years, he had tried to resist his Imperial masters, but the Imperial controllers could manipulate him at will. Terpfin had sabotaged Admiral Akbar's expanded B-wing fighter so that it crashed on Vortex, destroying the precious Cathedral of Winds and disgracing Akbar. And Terpfin had planted a tracer on another B-wing, which had allowed him to uncover the location of the secret planet Anoth, where baby Anakin Solo lived in isolation. He had passed that crucial information to Fergan. Terpfin assumed that by now the Caridans must be mounting an attack to kidnap the third Jedi child. Only in the last day had the voices in his head ceased, freeing him to race to Leia in order to undo some of the damage he had inflicted upon the New Republic. Or so he hoped. He felt faint as he heard footsteps in the great temple, but when Leia Organa Solo emerged into the daylight, he forced himself to straighten up. She looked disheveled, as though she had run to learn the news she expected the B-wing would be carrying from Coruscant. Leia stopped when she saw him.
"I know you. Terpfin, right? Why have you come here?"
Terpfin hung his head. Before she could fire off more questions, Terpfin confessed everything. Leia stared down at Terpfin's bulbous, scarred head and felt as if she were being strangled. The Imperials knew where to find her son.
"Please, Minister Organa Solo, we must go to Anoth at once. We must evacuate your child before an Imperial strike squad can reach him. While I was under Fergan's influence, I transmitted Anoth's coordinates to Karida, but I did not keep a copy of them. You must take us there yourself."
"I can't contact Anoth," Leia said. "Even I don't know where the planet is. It was kept secret from me, too. The only ones who knew were my assistant, Winter, and she's on Anoth, and Akbar, who is now hiding on Calamari, and Luke, who's in a coma."
"Terpfin, you're coming with me. We'll find Akbar, and he can take us to Winter and Anakin.
The Jedi students will have to look after the twins.
Minister Organa Solo,
Turpfin said,
I am sorry.
She shot a look at him, but said, apologize when this is all over. Right now, I need your help.
The Millennium Falcon emerged from hyperspace near the coordinates of the destroyed Caridan star system. Han Solo polarized the segmented viewport to look out at the rubble that had recently been a group of planets and a burning sun. Now he saw only a slash of still glowing gases, a sea of radiation from the supernova. Lando Calrissian sat beside him, his mouth open in amazement.
Boy, that kid sure knows how to cause damage.
Han nodded. His throat felt dry and raw.
So what are we going to do? What was the point of coming to this system?
Han pressed his lips together, searching for an answer. It had felt right to come to Karida to pick up Kip's trail. I want to see what he saw. Think like he might have been thinking. What was going through his mind?
You know him better than I do, buddy. What would be your next target?
Han stared out at the inferno of what had been Karida's sun. If my goal was to strike out at the Empire, causing as much damage as possible, I would head for... He turned sharply and looked at Lando.
Let me guess. Next you'll say that we're going to follow him to the core systems.
Han set the coordinates in the navicomputer.
You got it, old buddy.
Near the bright heart of the galaxy, where stars lay close together in uncharted configurations, the Emperor had gathered his defenses to make a last stand. But since Palpatine's destruction, the Imperial warlords had fought each other for control. With no military genius like Grand Admiral Thrawn to unify the remnants, the Imperial war machine had withdrawn into the protected core systems. The warlords had left the victorious New Republic to lick its wounds, while they vied for supremacy in their own corner of the galaxy. But as soon as one military leader managed to come out on top, the forces would strike against the New Republic. Unless Kip Duran destroyed them first. Han and Lando found an exploded red dwarf star on the fringes of the core. The small, dim sun had been unremarkable and, according to the Falcon's planetary atlas, had no habitable worlds. However, scouts had determined that the red dwarf system sheltered a starship construction yard, weapons depot, and storage for archives shielded in thick vaults deep within several lifeless, rocky planets. Han looked out the viewport and saw that the small star had exploded in a less spectacular fashion than Karida's sun, a fizzle without enough mass to generate a significant chain reaction, but the shock fronts had still pulverized the closely orbiting planets.
He's done it again, Han said. You can't miss a trail like the one Kip is leaving.
Lando squinted at the scanners.
I've got him, Han. The sun crusher is sitting high above the ecliptic like he's just watching.
Han sat up straight.
Plot a course. We're going after him, full speed.
As the Falcon closed the gap, though, the sun crusher began to flit away.
Han opened a comm channel. Kip, it's me, Han Solo. Kid, we've got to talk to you.
In answer, the sun crusher winked as it changed course and increased speed.
Punch it, Han said to Lando. Let's go.
The sun crusher arced around and began to grow larger in the viewport.
Han? He's coming right at us.
Han felt exhilarated, glad that Kip was turning around to talk with them.
I think he's going to ram us.
Han blinked in disbelief. He bent over the transmitter.
Kip, don't do this. Kip, it's me, Han.
The sun crusher hurtled past them, swerving at the last moment to fire a burst of lasers from the defensive weapons mounted on its hull. Han heard the blasts thump against the Falcon, but they caused no damage.
Must have been a warning, Lando said.
Yeah, some warning. Kip, why don't... The comm crackled.
Han, leave me alone. Go away. I've got work to do.
The sun crusher hurtled toward them as if for another strafing run. As the small craft rushed past, Han worked the controls and yanked out with the Millennium Falcon's tractor beam, latching onto and holding the small superweapon.
Hey, I caught him,
Han said in surprise. A warning came over the comm.
I'm sure one of these resonance torpedoes will make short work of a piece of junk like the Falcon.
Han saw the sun crusher's toroidal generator glow as it powered up to launch a projectile.
I've got a bad feeling about this, he said.
The sun had set behind the giant ball of Yavin. With the onset of the moon's half-night, the sky was lit only by an orangish glow reflected from the gas giant, giving the jungle a ruddy appearance. Deep in the jungle night, creatures rose out of shadowy caves and flapped their jagged wings. Hissing and mindless, they followed a burning compulsion that drove them toward the great temple. Two heads spread out on long, sinuous necks from each muscular torso. A wicked tail dangled behind each creature, ending in a hooked stinger that glistened with crystals of poison. Iridescent scales glittered in the coppery dusk light, as if illuminated by stoked embers. Yellow reptilian eyes widened their pupil slits, seeking their target. Alchemical monsters created long ago during the dominion of Exarchun on Yavin 4, these creatures had lived for generations in the black and dripping grottos of distant mountains. Now three of them had awakened, called by Exarchun to destroy the body of Luke Skywalker. Folding their bat-like wings against them, they squirmed through the skylight into the open chamber and descended toward Luke's helpless body, long talons extended. Luke's image shimmered but cast no light in the dim chambers where the twins lay sleeping. He desperately needed help. He knew no one else could hear him, but there was a small chance that the Jedi twins might be able to. Jason, Luke said. The boy stirred. Beside him, Jaina sighed and rolled over in her sleep. Jason, Jaina, I need your help. Only you can help me. The boy woke up, blinking his dark eyes. He scanned the room, yawned, then fixed his eyes upon Luke's image. Uncle Luke? Wake your sister and follow me. Tell her to raise the alarm and bring all the other Jedi, but you have to help me now. Jason shook his sister, though she had already started to awaken. The boy trotted down the hall on his little legs. Luke drifted in front of him, urging him faster toward the turbo lift. Jaina, meanwhile, ran into Silgal's quarters and screamed, "Help! Help! Uncle Luke needs help!" Hearing the alarms as he and Jason stood together in the turbo lift, Luke realized that R2, still standing sentry duty in the grand audience chamber, must have triggered them. The turbo lift shot upward and spilled Luke and Jason into the vast, dim chamber. Down at the end of the promenade, R2 hummed back and forth, his arc-welding arm extended, flashing blue sparks, but the reptilian creatures flew around the droid as if they considered it no threat. Two of the creatures flapped up from the raised platform upon hearing the turbo lift doors open. They honked and hissed, spitting at the small boy who emerged alone to challenge them. The third creature perched on the edge of the long stone table on which Luke's body lay. Its two heads bobbed forward to let out a dual squeal of annoyance. One of the heads snapped down to tear a mouthful of cloth from Luke's robe. The other head flashed a jagged row of fangs.
Chase them away from my body, Jason. Go help R2. The others will be here in just a few seconds.
Jason shrieked like a warrior as he ran toward the monsters, flailing his arms. Two of the creatures swooped into the air, then flapped their leathery wings to dive at him. Jason ducked at the last moment. The creatures dragged their hooked metallic claws on the flagstone floor, sending up showers of sparks. The boy didn't slow. He ran toward the last of the reptilian creatures, which was staring hungrily down at Luke's soft-closed eyelids. Jason reached the raised platform. The creature rose into the air, thrashing with its scorpion tail and snapping with both heads full of clacking fangs. Luke followed the boy as Jason struggled up onto the platform. Grim and determined, the boy stood guard by his uncle's motionless body.
Jason, take my lightsaber.
The three flying creatures circled the chamber, croaking at each other as if receiving instructions from Exarchun. The boy picked up the lightsaber handle. It was as long as his forearm.
Don't know how.
I'll guide you. Let me fight with you.
Jason held the smooth handle in front of him and pushed the activation button. The lightsaber's deadly shaft blazed in the dimness. When Silgal, holding Jaina by the hand, Tian and Dorsk 81 rushed into the chamber, Jason was pirouetting with the energy blade, wielding the lightsaber as if it were an extension of his arm. One of the lizard creatures darted in, but Jason cleaved off a head with one smooth stroke. He left only a smoking neck stump as the other head of the monster writhed and flailed and spat. The creature crashed to the floor and flopped its leathery wings against the flagstones. The remaining two monsters struck with their scorpion stingers. The little boy swung the lightsaber, neatly slicing off one pointed stinger, then rolled out of the way as gouts of black poison spurted from the amputated end. Maddened with pain, the injured thing flapped in the air until it grappled against its companion, rending with claws and snapping with two heads full of tearing teeth. It struck with the useless stump of its stinger, but the stronger creature stabbed with its own stinger, leaving a burning hole in the torso of its attacker, a hole that sizzled as the poison ate deeper and deeper. The stronger flying lizard latched its jaws onto the scaly throat of the other. When its victim had ceased its struggles, the survivor released its claws, flapping higher as the carcass fell with a thud onto the floor. Silgal, Tian, and Dorsk 81 froze on the threshold of the turbolift.
He's got to help him,
Dorsk 81 said. Silgal assessed the furious battle.
Perhaps Jason doesn't need our help.
Jaina snatched her hand free from Silgal's grip and scrambled down the promenade. Silgal ran after her. The last of the reptiles shrieked through double throats. It dove down in an unstoppable plunge. Jason stepped back to meet it, holding the lightsaber poised at his shoulder, waiting for the right moment. Coolly, as the creature came in with dripping fangs and outstretched claws, Jason swung in a clean arc, perfectly in command of his reflexes. The glowing blade struck and severed both throats in one sizzling flash. The carcass of the creature, convulsing its wings, crashed into Jason and drove him to the floor. R2 rolled forward to help.
He is all right,
Jaina called, finally reaching the raised platform.
It's Jason.
Jaina,
Silgal cried, catching up with her. The tip of the lightsaber appeared, smoking and blazing through the carcass as Jason cut his way free of the stiff wings. Silgal assisted him. Suddenly, the first fallen creature lurched back up, clinging to life with its remaining head, still desperate to kill Luke. With one stump of its severed neck still oozing dark blood, it clutched the edge of the stone table and hauled itself up, snapping its scorpion tail, preparing to sting. In one last moment of defiance, pushed on by the evil spirit controlling it, the wounded creature struck at Luke's unprotected throat. But Jaina arrived first. The little girl jumped up and grabbed its wings, yanking backward with all her weight. Writhing and snapping, the creature tried to bite down on the hands holding its leathery wings. A mere second behind Jaina, Silgal wrapped her powerful calamarian hands around the creature's long serpentine throat, crushing its vertebrae like dry twigs. The thing slumped down across the table, finally dead. Silgal rushed to Jason just as he calmly replaced the lightsaber beside Luke's motionless form. She hugged him, then stared in awe at the little boy.
Uncle Luke was with me,
Jason said.
He showed me. He's here.
Silgal blinked her large round eyes.
What do you mean?
Tian asked.
Can you see him now?
Dorsk 81 said.
Yes, he's right there.
Jaina pointed to thin air.
He says he's proud of us.
The Jedi trainees looked at each other, then gazed at the open air above Luke's prone body.
What else does he say?
Silgal said. Jason and Jaina both sat still for a moment as if listening.
Exar-kun, he's making the trouble,
Jason said. Jaina finished.
Stop Exar-kun. Then Uncle Luke can come back.
Working hard to appear useful and important, Ambassador Fergan stood on the control deck of the dreadnought Vendetta, thinking of the explosion of Carita's star, the screams of those low-ranking individuals, and all the valuable equipment he left behind. Fergan's dreams of resurrecting the Empire had dwindled to a point, but it was a laser-bright point. If he could just get his hands on the Jedi baby, there would be hope for the galaxy once more. The Vendetta passed through the broken belt of asteroids scattered along Anoth's orbit. Anoth itself had shattered into three components, two large chunks in contact, scraping and creating static discharges so that titanic lightning bolts blasted between them. Farther out circled a smaller, misshapen rock that held a breathable atmosphere in its lowlands. In a century or two, the three chunks would pulverize each other to space dust, but at the moment, Anoth was a hidden and protected haven. Until now. Fergan went down in the Vendetta's hangar bay and staging area, where he stepped into a flurry of stormtrooper activity. White armored troopers jogged in tight formation across the metal-plated floor, carrying weapons, stashing siege gear and power packs inside the cargo holds of the MT-80s, mountain terrain assault transports. Fergan relished the opportunity to see the recently designed weapon in actual combat. Intended for ground assaults on remote mountain citadels, the MT-80's articulated joints and sophisticated claw footpads could scale even vertical surfaces of rock. Supercharged lasers were mounted on each joint, and two small blaster cannons hung on either side of the low-slung pilot's compartment.
"You," Fergan said to a trooper climbing into his cockpit. "I'm riding with you."
Inside the stronghold on Anoth, Leia's personal servant, Winter, glanced at the chronometer and at the giggling, dark-haired baby, Anakin. It was time to put the young man to bed. She picked up the baby and bounced him against her hip as she went deep into the facility built into the caves and rock spires of the planet. Anakin's shielded bedroom was brightly lit and decorated with soothing pastel colors. Tinkling music filled the air, a cheerful melody mixed with quiet wind and rushing water.
"Good evening, Master Anakin," said the caregiver droid.
An enhanced protocol model, the TDL droid was programmed to perform a majority of the functions required to care for a young child. TDL models had been marketed across the galaxy as nanny droids for busy politicians, space military personnel, and even smugglers who had children but too little time to spend with them. The TDL droid had a silvery surface with all corners and sharp edges smoothed for comfort. Because nannies and mothers were expected to need more than the usual set of hands, TDL nanny droids had four fully functional arms, all of which were covered with warm synthetic flesh, as was the torso, to provide a nurturing experience for the baby. Winter handed the baby over to his nanny and left the nursery. She had gone as far as the door of the operations room when the intruder alarms went off. She rushed into the control center, scanning the big screens that showed images of the stark landscape. Eight spider-like Imperial walkers swarmed up the stone pinnacle, firing bright green blasts against the thick walls of the stronghold, searching for a way in. The Jedi trainees gathered in the dusty, abandoned war room of the Great Temple. They had chosen it as the most fitting place to plan their battle against Exar Kun. On the third level of the ancient ziggurat, the war room had once been used by the Rebel Alliance as a control center for their secret base. Here, the tactical genius General Jan Dodona had planned the strike against the first Death Star. Silgal, the team's unifying force, was tired. In the aftermath of the attack of the reptilians, she had tended Luke's minor wounds like a born Jedi healer. She knew she had to fight her exhaustion now in order to keep the group together. She looked at all of them. A dozen of the best. But now they were gripped with fear and indecision, unprepared for the trial forced upon them. Some, such as Kirana T, Kam Soyusar, and surprisingly Streen, reacted with outrage to the long-dead Lord of the Sith. Others, particularly Dorsk 81, were filled with an unreasoning fear, afraid to challenge the dark power that had been sufficient to warp other students and defeat Master Skywalker. So Gal herself did not look forward to the fight, but she vowed to do everything she could against their enemy.
"What if Exar Kun can hear our plans?"
Dorsk 81 said, his large eyes shining in the harsh lights.
"Even here, he might be spying on us."
"The Dark Man can be everywhere,"
Streen said, leaning across the table, cluttered with tactical maps. He glanced around the room as if afraid someone was watching.
"There's no other place we can go," Silgal said. "If Exar Kun can find us here, he can find us wherever we go. We must operate on the assumption that we can still fight him." "Tian," she said, "much of our plan depends on your knowledge of ancient Jedi lore. Tell us what you know about Exar Kun."
Tian had only a small amount of Jedi potential. Master Skywalker had made that clear to her, but she would not be swayed from her resolve to become one of the new Jedi Knights. She had become enamored of Jedi legends, traveling from system to system, digging through ancient writings and folk tales, compiling tales of the Jedi from thousands of years before the Dark Times. The Jedi Holocron had been a treasure trove, and Tian had spent much of her time studying it, replaying forgotten legends, clarifying details. But the Holocron was destroyed when Master Skywalker had asked the simulated gatekeeper, the ancient Jedi Master Votos Yoskbas, to tell of his student Exar Kun, who had rebuilt the Brotherhood of the Sith. Tian looked at the other trainees with her eerie mother-of-pearl eyes.
Kun seems to have built his primary stronghold on this jungle moon about 4,000 years ago during the Great Sith War. He enslaved the Masasi race to build all these temples as focal points for his power. Master Vodos Yoskbas became a martyr when he tried to turn his student Kun back to the light side. When Master Vodo did not succeed, the other Jedi banded together in a massive strike force. Though Kun had enormous power, it seems that the key was that the other Jedi combined their might. They fought together like one component in a much larger machine powered by the Force. I've found only sketchy information, but it seems that in the final battle, the unified Jedi wiped out most of the jungles on Yavin 4, laying everything waste in their efforts to destroy Exar Kun. Kun drained dry the life force of all of his Masasi slaves in one last gambit. The ancient Jedi succeeded in destroying much of what Exar Kun had built and obliterated his body, but he somehow managed to preserve his spirit within the temples for all these years.
Then we must finish the job, Kirana T said.
She wore her reptilian body armor all the time now.
But how? Streen said. Thousands of Jedi could not obliterate the Dark Man. We are only 12.
Yes, Kirana T said. But this time, Exar Kun doesn't have a race of enslaved people to draw upon. He has no resources but himself. Besides, Kun has already been defeated once, and he knows it.
Silgal added,
And all of us have trained together from the beginning. Master Skywalker made us to be a team.
Stand off. Han Solo felt cold sweat spring from his forehead as he looked out from the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon. In front of him, the Sun Crusher, still linked by the Falcon's powerful tractor beam, powered up its supernova torpedo launcher. Han pounded his fist on the console.
Hold it, kid! I thought you were my friend!
If you were my friend, you wouldn't try to stop me.
Lando whispered, Han, remember when you and Kip took the Sun Crusher away from Maw installation?
Han nodded, not sure what Lando was getting at.
Sure. Back then, we linked the ships together because the Falcon's Nava computer wouldn't work. Listen, we've still got the Sun Crusher's control codes in here.
All right. I'll keep him talking. You work to deactivate the Sun Crusher. Han toggled the comm system on again.
Kid, who got you out of the spice mines of Kessel? Who broke you out of the detention cell on the Gorgon? Who was with you during the escape from the Maw? Who promised to do everything he could to make your life worth living again after your years of misery?
It didn't work.
Why not, kid? What went wrong? What happened on Yavin 4? I know you and Luke didn't get along.
It had nothing to do with Luke Skywalker.
Kip was so defensive that Han knew what he said wasn't true.
There in the temples, I learned things Master Skywalker would never teach. I learned how to be strong. I learned how to fight the Empire, to turn my own anger into a weapon.
Look, kid, I don't claim to understand anything about the Force. In fact, I once said it was a hokey religion full of mumbo-jumbo, but I do know that what you're saying sounds dangerously close to the dark side.
There was a deep pause.
Han, I've got it,
Lando whispered.
The Sun Crusher suddenly went dark. The lights in its cockpit, the aiming beacons on its laser cannons, and the blaze of plasma at the end of its toroidal torpedo generator.
You tricked me! You claimed to be my friend, and now you've betrayed me. It's just like Exar Kun said. Friends betray you. A Jedi has no time for friendship. You should all die.
Astonishingly, the power in the Sun Crusher surged back to life again, despite Lando's overrides. The lights came on in a blaze.
It's not my fault,
Lando squawked, scrambling to reroute the command. I didn't know he could bypass it so fast.
Hip can do things with the Force that you and I can't understand.
The energy torpedo launcher fired up with a flare of intense plasma, brighter than before, ready to launch at the Falcon. And this time, Kip did not hesitate. Streen dozed cross-legged on the cold flagstone floor as he sat guarding Master Skywalker. In his lap, he held Luke's lightsaber. 12 candles, one for each of the Jedi trainees, flickered around Luke's body, shedding a faint but protective glow into the motionless air. A voice replaced the silence.
Wake up, my student. The winds are blowing.
Streen focused on the black form of Exar Kun in the center of the throne room. He climbed slowly to his feet. He felt calm and strong, angry at how the dark man had set a sharp hook in his own weakness and dragged him along.
I won't do your bidding, dark man,
he said.
And how did you propose to resist? You are already mine. Now take the weapon and cleave Skywalker in two. Let us be done with this.
Streen took one step toward Exar Kun, holding the lightsaber before him.
This blade is meant for you, dark man.
To Streen's surprise, the shadow of the dark man drifted away from him down the promenade.
I can find other tools, Streen. If you defy me, I can find ways of inflicting pain far beyond the capabilities of your imagination.
Kun's shadow drifted farther away, and a tall figure emerged into the Grand Audience Chamber, Kirana T, clad in her polished reptilian armor.
Are you running away, Exar Kun?
Kirana T said.
Frightened off so easily?
Kun whirled to face her.
Another foolhardy student. I would have come to you in time. The witches of Dathomir would be fine additions to a new Sith Brotherhood.
You'll never get a chance to ask them, Exar Kun. You're trapped here.
Kun's shadow distorted, but he held his ground.
You cannot threaten me.
Kun loomed over her. Kirana T ducked swiftly, fluidly into a fighting stance. Suddenly, she too held a lightsaber.
Where did you get that weapon?
Kun demanded.
It belonged to Ventoris. He once tried to fight you and failed.
She slashed with the lightsaber and Kun flinched back toward Streen.
But I will succeed.
Kirana T stalked toward the platform where Luke's body lay, where Streen stood with the other lightsaber. Kun was trapped between them. Another Jedi trainee emerged, grim and wiry Cam Solusar.
And if she fails, I will pick up the lightsaber and fight you.
He marched forward to join them. Ventian entered, throwing her challenge at Exar Kun as she walked up to the platform.
And I will fight you as well.
Sil'Gal stepped in with Jason and Jaina, each holding one of her hands.
And we will fight you. We will all fight you, Exar Kun.
The remaining Jedi trainees flooded into the chamber, converging in a group that surrounded the Dark Lord of the Sith. Kun raised his opaque arms in a brisk gesture. With a flicker of wind, the 12 candles around Master Skywalker's body snuffed out, plunging the room into deep shadow.
We are not afraid of the darkness, Tian said. We can make our own light.
At her words, all 12 of the Jedi candidates were limned with a faint, iridescent blue glow that grew brighter as the new Jedi converged around Exar Kun.
Even joined together, you are too weak to fight me.
The black silhouette turned, staring at those who resisted him. The Jedi trainees grasped their throats, straining to breathe, their faces darkening with the effort. Kun's shadow expanded, growing darker and more powerful. He towered over Streen.
Streen, take your lightsaber and finish these weaklings. Then I will allow you to live.
Streen heard the blood sing in his ears as his body strained for oxygen. The rushing sound reminded him of blowing wind, gale-force storms. Wind. Air. He grasped the wind with his Jedi powers, moving the air itself and making it flow into his lungs, past Kuhn's invisible stranglehold. Cool, sweet oxygen filled him, and Streen exhaled and inhaled again. Reaching out with his power, he did the same for all of the other Jedi students, nudging air into their lungs, helping them breathe, helping them grow stronger.
We are more powerful than you,
Dorskedi One gasped.
How you must hate me! I can feel your anger!
Sil'Gal used the silken ambassadorial voice she had worked so hard to develop.
There is no anger. We don't hate you, Exar Kuhn. You are an object lesson for us. You have taught us much about what it is to be a true Jedi. By observing you, we see that the dark side has little strength of its own. You have no power that we do not have. You merely used our own weakness against us.
The Jedi trainees stepped closer together, cinching the circle around the trapped, shadowy form. Streen held his lightsaber high, while across the circle, Kirana Tee raised hers to a striking position. The glow around the new Jedi Knights grew brighter as the synergy between the trainees grew more powerful. Streen wasn't sure exactly when another image joined the Jedi candidates. He saw a new form, without a physical body, short and hunched, with withered hands held in front of it. A misshapen funnel face, whiskered with tentacles, stared with small eyes hooded by a shelf of brow. The ancient Jedi Master Vodos Yoskbas. Kuhn's image also saw the ancient Jedi Master, and his expression froze in astonishment.
Together, Jedi can overcome their weaknesses,
Master Vodo said.
Exar Kuhn, my student, you are defeated at last.
No!
The silhouette fought to discover a part of the circle he could breach.
Yes,
came another voice, a strong voice. Opposite Master Vodo glimmered the faint, washed-out form of a young man in Jedi robes. Master Skywalker.
The way to extinguish a shadow, Sil'Gal said, is to increase the light.
Kiranati stepped forward with the lightsaber that had been built by Gantoris. Streen met her with Luke Skywalker's lightsaber. The two stared into each other's eyes, nodded, and then struck with the brilliant luminous blade. Their beams crossed in the middle of Exar Kuhn's shadowy body. Pure light intersecting pure light with an explosion of lightning. The flash of dazzling white seemed as bright as an exploding sun. Darkness flooded out of the shade of Exar Kuhn. The blackness shattered and fragments flew around the circle seeking a weak heart in which to hide. Streen and Kirana Tee kept their lightsabers crossed, the energy sizzling and searing. With the force, Streen touched the winds again. The air inside the Grand Audience Chamber swirled. The cyclone grew tighter in an invisible knot around the shredded shadow, trapping it and carrying it up toward the rooftop and out, flinging it into the vast emptiness. Exar Kuhn had vanished. The Jedi Knights stood joined together for a final moment, relishing the shared force. The image of Master Vodos Yoskbas stared toward the ceiling, as if to catch a last glimpse of his conquered student, and then he, too, disappeared. With a wheezing cough as he expelled long-trapped air from his lungs and drew in a fresh breath, Master Skywalker groaned and sat up on the stone platform.
You've done it, Luke said,
gaining strength with each lungful of cool, clean air. The new Jedi Knight surged toward him.
You have broken the bonds.
With squeals of delight, Jason and Jaina ran to their Uncle Luke. He pulled them into his arms. Luke Skywalker smiled at his students.
Together you make a formidable team, indeed. Perhaps we need no longer fear the darkness.
In the Sun Crusher's pilot seat, Kip Duran crouched over the controls. He stared at the Millennium Falcon as if it were a demon ready to spring at him. He dug his fingernails into the metallic surface of the navigation panels. Part of him was appalled at the idea of threatening Han Solo's life, that he would want to destroy the Millennium Falcon. It had seemed an easy threat, the obvious thing to do, but it came from a dark shadow in the back of his mind. The whispering voice chewed at his thoughts, haunted him constantly. It was the voice he had heard during his training on Yavin 4. But Han Solo's words had tugged at him, too. And just as he had been about to speak warmly to Han, to ask his friend to come talk with him, his controls went dead. Furious now, Kip wanted to kill those who had betrayed him. He gripped the firing handles. His thumbs rested on the launch button, squeezing, ready, squeezing. And then the haunting voice of Exar Kun rose to a wail in his mind, an utterly forlorn scream as if he were being torn out of this universe and exiled to another place entirely, where he could torment Kip Duran no more. Kip snapped backward in his control seat as if an invisible tow cable had been severed. The Millennium Falcon still gripped the Sun Crusher in its tractor beam. As Kip saw the battered old ship, Han Solo's prize possession, he felt a tidal wave of despair.
Han! Han, this is Kip. I surrender.
Moments after Wedge Antilles and his assault squad saw the Death Star prototype sailing away, they made their landing on Maw installation, only to witness the first explosion in the installation's power reactor complex. The second time detonation went off as they charged into the complex. The charges planted by the sabotage crew exploded at the base of the reactor's cooling towers, shutting down the complex's enormous generator. Wedge shook his head to clear his ringing ears.
I need an assessment of the damages, quick!
Three of the leading soldiers raced down the hall, only to encounter a group of Maw installation personnel fleeing the wreckage. The saboteurs were led by a one-armed man with purplish-green skin and a sour expression.
It's too late to stop anything, the man said. I am Worman, division leader for plant operations. Accept my surrender. My team and I would appreciate it if you could get us off this rock before the whole thing explodes.
Wedge motioned to four of his soldiers. See that the prisoners are secured. We've got to get that power reactor functioning again, or we'll have to evacuate. Wedge and the technicians proceeded cautiously into the reactor housing. The heat struck them like a sand whirl during the hot season on Tatooine. The air smelled thick with acrid lubricants, molten metal, and charred high-energy explosive. Red warning lights flooded the chamber, reflecting from whistling jets of steam like droplets of flying blood. Laboring pumps and engines thudded with a pounding beat that made Wedge's skull ache. A large reactor component had been slagged, left with ragged, dripping edges. He squinted as the techs ran forward, yanking handheld detectors from their belts to study radiation leaks. One trotted up to Wedge. Both the primary and the backup cooling pumps have been destroyed. Our friend Worman was right. He has initiated a meltdown, and there's nothing we can do to stop it. We can't fix this equipment.
Can we shut down the reactor? Wedge said.
It's been locked on and the controls are destroyed, the tech answered. I suppose there's a chance we could reroute and rig up temporary systems in an hour or two, but if we shut the reactor down, we also terminate power and life support to the installation.
Wedge looked around the wreckage as his stomach sank.
I didn't lead this strike force just to let all the scientists on the Death Star get away, while the whole installation is destroyed under my feet.
Wedge discussed some strategies with the techs for staving off the meltdown, and then went to find Kui, who had gone directly to the laboratory, to ask her if she knew anything that could help them. Kwee-Zooks, assisted by 3PO, had unlocked the codes that allowed her access to her journals and personal notes in the main computer. Kui's heart pounded as she scanned words she herself had typed, but it was not herself, it was a Kui from the past, who had been brainwashed by Imperials. She read her daily accounts with growing uneasiness, the experiments, the meetings, the endless progress reports.
Was this all my life was?
Kui asked. She scrolled down, scanning day after identical day.
How empty.
Excuse me, 3PO said. Did you ask for assistance?
Oh, 3PO.
Tears stung her eyes. She heard footsteps and turned as Wedge entered the lab. She rushed up to hug him.
Is it bad? He said. Sorry I couldn't be here when you first entered the lab.
Hui shook her head.
No, I had to face this myself, anyway.
Find anything useful? He stepped away from her, becoming the general again. We need to know how many scientists were at the installation. Hui stiffened.
I'm not sure I can help. I've been looking over my daily life. It doesn't look like I knew any of the other scientists. More than 10 years of my life, and I knew no one. I worked. I thought I was dedicated. Defeating universal challenges meant a great deal to me, but I didn't even know what it was for. All I cared about was finding the next solution. How could I have been so naive?
Wedge gave her an encouraging hug. His comlink beeped at him from his waist.
General Antilles, we've brought down some temporary equipment to the reactor facility. We've modified the critical components taken from one of the corvettes, as you suggested. We've managed to emplace them, and the systems are marginally functional. The core temperature levels of the reactor have begun dropping, and we expect them to go below the red lines within the next several hours.
Wedge switched off and smiled at Kui.
See? Everything's working out after all.
She nodded, raising her face to look through the long, narrow window at the top of the wall. Pools of hot gas drifted around the Maw's black holes. A shadow appeared in the multicolored nebula, a huge triangular shape like a spear point plunging through the gases and emerging into the safe gravitational island. Kui stiffened, biting back an outcry of panic. Admiral Dalla's flagship, the Gorgon, had returned to Maw installation.